This first meeting of the local government subcommittee to order. We have no minutes. This is our first meeting, so we should probably do quick introductions.
Go around. I think your mic is on.
No?
Testing.
Better.
Test.
Maybe it's just not close enough. There we go. Okay. So, Mike, you want to start?
Sure. Representative Mike Freiberg, Golden Valley.
My name is Mini Safi. I'm the DFL House Research Consultant. I'll be working on this committee, elections, government finance, and state government.
Representative Toujon.
The former member of the Maplewood City Council.
From Maplewood City Council.
Steve Elkins, Bloomington, former member of the Bloomington City Council and Metropolitan Council.
Anna Fidinganoff, I'm the CLA for this committee.
Amanda Rudolph, I'm the CA.
Doug Dyson in House Research.
I'm Jerry Hertos, representing District 33A, 11 communities out there that represent about almost 40% of Hennepin County geographically.
Joe Marvell, Committee Research for House GOP.
Joe McDonald from Wright County, representing Wright County, from the city of Delano and other great cities in Wright County, including South Haven, Annandale, Howard Lake, Waverly, Montrose, Rockford, Delano, Greenfield, and Rockford, and other townships. So good morning, and thank you for having me on the committee.
Chair Sandy Mason is feeling a little under the weather today, so I'm filling in her place. Next order of business is the rules, and that is in the package, and similar to the probably very similar to the rules for most of our other committees as well. So there shouldn't be any surprises in there. Mostly almost entirely in information presentations today, and the first one is from House Research, Deb Dyson. So to save time, I'm just going to allow her to give her presentation from her seat because she doesn't have any slides for us. So Deb.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Deb Dyson from House Research, and I'm going to just go very briefly through the two handouts that should be in your folders. One is called Terms Used in Local Government Legislation, and the other is the State-Local Relations. In the past, I've found these two to be useful topics to just orient people to the topic of local government law in the context of the legislature. Under the one that's terms used in local government legislation, the first one is, what is a local government? And I think what you'll find is that it can be defined almost any way, and what you always have to look at is there a specific definition in the legislation or in the law that is brought into the legislation, or is it a matter of determining the context? I think in general, local government is referring to counties, towns, and cities. Sometimes single and multi-purpose special districts, such as school districts, are included in it, and in the term political subdivision. But basically, you need to be aware that it's not a single definition, and context and specific definitions are important to look for. The term political subdivision is probably the broadest term, and again, sometimes it's defined in the law or the legislation. Sometimes it's not, but it is the broadest term, and it's used in that broad context, it means not the state and not the federal government. So it's a political subdivision of the state. Public corporation shows up sometimes. It's an entity that's created in law for the administration of public affairs. It would be an instrumentality of the state and may include counties, towns, cities, and special purpose districts. It can also refer to quasi-governmental entities that are created in law and are often exempt from some laws that apply to state agencies. And then there's the municipal corporation, which in its narrowest sense is a city, but it often can be defined to include other governmental units. Narrowing down to cities, there are two types of cities in Minnesota, the statutory city, which is governed by state statutes, and then the home rule charter city. And then there are special laws for individual cities that sometimes you will be seeing. A home rule charter city is governed by its charter and then any special laws enacted for that city. And in addition, a home rule charter, if a charter is silent on a matter that is addressed for statutory cities by general law, And the general law doesn't open for charter cities to use it. There is a statute that says a home rule charter city can exercise that power that is granted to statutory cities. One thing, too, that as a drafter I'll say that I try to be aware of is that when the term city is used without including the term home rule charter cities in legislation, it only applies to statutory cities, and that's in Minnesota statutes. But that's a law that was enacted back in the 70s, so some of the older laws, it's harder to know how they apply. Cities in Minnesota are divided. In addition to having home rule and statutory cities, you have classifications of cities, and it is based strictly on population. You have first, second, and third, and fourth class cities, and in the publication it gives you the population figures. At this time we have the four first class cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Rochester. Classifications take effect after the federal decennial census. The terms village and borough were used up until the 1970s, but those terms were eliminated, and all villages and boroughs became statutory cities in the mid-70s. Municipality, again, that is a term that typically means a city, but can be defined to include just about anything. Again, context and definition in what you're dealing with is important to pay attention to. County, unlike all these other terms, rarely needs any additional definition. A county is a county. And town and township and urban town. Town and township over the years have been used interchangeably in Minnesota law, but I think there has been an effort to distinguish in the law that a town is the organized town government, and township is the geographic area. I think they're referred to as congressional townships, which I believe are 6 by 6 square miles. There are also urban towns under one chapter of statute, and that is a determination by the town, and it's based again on population or its proximity to the Twin Cities. And they have urban towns have powers that are granted to statutory cities, not all of them, but additional powers. Incorporated and unincorporated, these are terms used to distinguish town and city. And then there is, in Minnesota statutes, Chapter 645, there are rules of interpretation. And so I cite that statute there. And lastly, on that, terms relating to local government, metropolitan area. This committee will be looking at topics related to the Metropolitan Council. And so metropolitan area, for the purposes of the Metropolitan Council, means the 7-county metropolitan area, with the exception of certain cities that have grown from the counties outside of that into the metropolitan area. For example, New Prague, Hanover, I think Rockford is now part of that, Cannon Falls. So those are areas that where there has been growth from outside the metropolitan area into the metropolitan area. But that is the term in statute that it's related to metropolitan government here. There are other definitions of metropolitan area that relate to things that are governed by federal definitions, metropolitan statistical area, and I know there, I think there's a new definition, the one I have here for 2015, the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Bloomington metropolitan statistical area has 14 Minnesota counties and some Wisconsin counties. So I just wanted to highlight some of the terms that are used in local government law. The other handout that I decided to include in this presentation is the publication that says State-Local Relations. And this is just to provide the context of how the legislature relates to local government. And essentially, local governments are creatures of the state, as the terminology is often used. Local government, again, is a general term. And then for finding general purpose local governments, there are cities and towns. And then counties were originally established as administrative arms of the state, but over the time have been given more authority and powers and duties to function as general purpose local government. In Minnesota, we are a Dillon's Rule state, as we're known, which means that, means that local governments possess the powers that are conferred by statute or implied as necessary to carry out legislatively conferred powers. And this is the basic principle that's been followed since it was first articulated by a judge in Iowa back in the 1870s. And there are two basic or major modifications to this rather stringent rule of the relationship between state and local government. One is the authority that is granted to cities to adopt home rule charters, and the other is the broad authority for cities and towns to legislate for the general welfare. And the only other thing I wanted to mention there is that counties actually do not have general welfare authority, although there's a health statute that's sometimes viewed as providing a broad grant of authority. But at this time, it's cities and towns that have that authority to legislate for the general welfare. With regard to the subcommittee's jurisdiction on local government and metropolitan government, I think some of the things that you will be seeing would relate to anything to do with powers and duties of local governments outside of the public finance area. I think the tax committee typically is going to be handling things related to taxing authority, and so I am not expecting that that would be here, but that's clearly a matter for the chairs and leadership to decide how bills are referred. With regard to, so some of the topics that come in might relate to the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law, joint powers, boundary adjustments. A lot of people just refer to that generally as annexation issues, if there are issues like that. Land use and planning and zoning, open meeting law. Those are often things that come before the committee, as well as special legislation for individual units of government that were particular city, county, or town is looking for legislation that would give them authority to do something that is not otherwise granted in law. The other major area for the committee would be metropolitan government, and in particular the Metropolitan Council. And over the recent years, there has been a lot of discussion and work on issues relating to the governance structure of the Metropolitan Council, and that may again be a topic of interest to this committee. And
I think we have two bills that have already been referred to us related to Metropolitan Council governance.
Mr. Chair, I believe that's right. I think I noticed that there's one to make it elected, another to create the staggered terms. And those have been issues pretty much perennially for as long as I can remember. And issues related to governance of the Metropolitan Council since it was created in 1967 have pretty much come up every year since then. So this is nothing new. The council, as I said, was created in 67 and is a political subdivision of the state with its jurisdiction in the seven metro counties. And it has general broad authority relating to the economical development and of the metropolitan area, and in particular as it relates to the regional systems related to transportation, parks and open space, and wastewater treatment. It actually owns and operates the regional transit system and the wastewater treatment or collection and treatment system at the wholesale level, not the municipal level, but the wholesale level. And I'm sure we'll hear more about the Metropolitan Council at a later date, so I will say no more about it at this time and let, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, that's all I had prepared to present to the subcommittee this morning.
Do members have any questions for Ms. Dyson? No? Then we can move on to our next presentation, which is the presenter is the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. See if I can figure out how to make this work. Well, thank you, Chair, committee members. My name is Elizabeth Waifel, and I am a lobbyist with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I'm here to tell you a little bit about our organization and the interaction or lack thereof with your committee that you might have during the next several months at the legislature. So we'll really appreciate this opportunity to speak with all of you. as you might guess, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities is dedicated to a stronger Greater Minnesota. Our mission is to develop viable, progressive communities for businesses and families through strong economic growth and good local governments. To meet that goal, we support fair property taxes, good land use planning, sensible environmental regulation, a balanced transportation system, and effective economic development tools. This map here shows you kind of the breadth of our organization. I was looking at our membership, and I think our smallest city may be Bowabic, which... Oh, Jesus. Then you can't see the map. You can't take me anywhere, apparently. Sorry about that, guys. I can do it without the presentation, and it can be passed along to you with the great map of all our cities.
Yeah, we usually figure these things out pretty quickly. There we go.
All right. There you go. There's our mission, in case you missed it. Yay. And going down to slide number 3. Here, you can now see a map of where all of our cities are located. You can't? No. Okay, well, you're going to pretend there's a large map behind me showing you a map of Greater
Minnesota. If you will.
Imagine if you will. Waro, Droso, Rushford, La Crescent down here. Pipestone, Marshall down here, Grand Marais, Ely up there, and a whole bunch of cities in between. It's right now we are currently at 97 members. I believe Bowabic is our smallest, about 976. Rochester is our largest, and we really do have a range of cities. I would say we tend not to have the super small ones. Most of them tend to be 1,500 or above. But we are united on several issues that may affect all cities, but really affect Greater Minnesota. The first and foremost, and probably the reason we were founded, was local government aid and property taxes. So if you're on taxes, you'll definitely be hearing a lot from us. We also work on economic development, annexation and land use, which is probably the most relevant for this committee, transportation and environmental regulation. The structure of the organization, our members, you know, they're cities, but they're represented within the organization by mayors, city council members, city staff. And those members come together and set our legislative priorities and positions every year. Then the board, with input from our membership, directly works with the lobbying team. And that's where I come in. We've got a lobbying team from Flaherty and Hood that does the legislative advocacy and organizational management for the CGMC. You may see me if you're on the environmental committee. I do environmental lobbying and annexation of land use for the coalition. Our executive director is Bradley Peterson, who, again, you'd probably see in taxes a lot. We have Shane Zart, who handles our transportation work, and Scott McMahon, who joined the firm recently and is doing our economic development work. And you may also see Marty Seifert, who is kind of our utility player and shows up on all our issues. But we work together on these issues, and the CGNC has no staff of their own. It's really it's the Flaherty and Hood, and then some of our independent consultants. Lauren Solberg, for example, works with us, as does a few others that provide some help. Now, a lot of people always get us confused with the league. We are organizations that work together, but we are very different. And wow, Gary's presentation just popped up when I said that. That was really amazing. I don't know how that happened. The League of Minnesota Cities, and they'll tell you more about it, works on behalf of all cities in Minnesota. But when you work on behalf of all cities, you can't necessarily weigh in on issues that impact regions differently. And so the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities was formed to really address those issues that really hit Greater Minnesota hard. If you think of a Venn diagram, the big circle is the League of Minnesota Cities, and it's almost all cities in Greater Minnesota. Then you would put our circle wholly within the League of Minnesota Cities. So almost, I would say, no, all of our members are also members of the League, but not all members of the League are members of our organization. And there are some members, there are obviously some cities in Greater Minnesota that don't belong to us. But the only qualification to belong to the League, to the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, is you have to be located outside the 7-county metro area. Every once in a while, you get some on the fringes that are like, please let us in, but nope, it's outside the 7-county metro area. And then you obviously have to pay your dues. The other thing I want to point out about that is that, you know, we do work very cooperatively with the League, with Metro Cities, and other government, local government organizations, because I would say on almost many issues, almost all issues are issues align, or the positions we take align. It's just that we place special emphasis on the ones that affect Greater Minnesota. Hi there. I'm glad that, you know, on our first the meeting of the committee, we're getting a good understanding of the technology. So,
you might have to just select whatever slide you're on.
Okay.
While we're doing, Representative Hertas?
Yeah, maybe while they're doing their technical thing, they take a question. So I've been around here a while. I've served on property taxes since the very first day I arrived here. Contentious issue is local government aid. Generally, there's been about $500 million or thereabouts appropriated each biennium for local government aid. And increasingly, more and more cities are going off formula. Not long ago, there were just a handful, and now I think we're up to around 90. I think that might be correct. And what is your organization's position on LGA? Are you committed to protecting what's left for those who get it, or are you willing to work in making sure that the remaining cities that have been off of formula and those communities that certainly share the same concerns to redistribute and reformula LGA so that it is distributed more equitably to all of our communities, because all of us are paying for this program?
Well, I'm going to go back to my original statement that I primarily do annexation, land use, and environmental regulation. I can fake my way through it, and then I may actually let some questions go to Gary Carlson or Bradley Peterson can come back in here. What I would say is that I want to say back in 2013, we worked on a bipartisan basis, you know, Republicans and Democrats, to redo the formula. And that was done in a way to sort of preserve the original intent of local government aid, which we think continues to be a very vibrant program. And the purpose of local government aid is to basically, you know, it's kind of what helped make the Minnesota miracle. It makes it so that, you know, cities of all sizes and shapes can be affording, you know, the basic services and other things that make a city great. What it tries to do is sort of, you know, correct for the differences in net tax capacity. And so the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities is committed to actually, we're not up at $500 million. I think we're at about 430 or 440. I can't remember the exact numbers. Again, I apologize. Ask me about wastewater. I'm all over it. But we are committed to trying getting it back up to the 2002 level, which, you know, on a pure dollar standpoint, we're still behind the 2002 level. So we think it's very important to get it back to that level. I will say we are also working on some tweaks because there have been some, you know, we think we did a really good job, again, working on a bipartisan basis to redo the formula. But it doesn't, you know, everyone, you know, what as the economy changes, factors can change. And so we are going to be introducing a bill to make those tweaks. The other thing I will say, though, is that sometimes when a city goes off of the formula, the reason it goes off the formula is because they have had significant growth in their tax capacity, because that is the fundamental basic, you know, local government aid is about addressing differences in tax capacity. And to go into more of that, I mean, we've got slides, we've got charts that can show you how much a dollar, you know, basically how much 1% of property tax revenue can raise you in a very wealthy
suburb like Orono versus what it can, you know, raise you in Moorhead or Orono, or excuse me, or St. Paul. And so that's really what it's correcting for. But beyond that, I'm going to just repeat that I know a lot about wastewater. Yeah. So I apologize that I can't do more than that, but we do specialize. Yeah.
So off formula means that you're no longer receiving LGA?
Is it? Well, in the Property Tax Committee in particular, this has always been a contentious issue, and it just so happens that 11 cities that I represent, majority of them are off of LGA, yet they're rural communities with miles and miles of gravel road. All of my communities expect me to do something about funding local streets, and you know, there's just not a lot of mechanisms for us to do that, and there's been little appetite amongst many of the members of the legislature to change the formula. Yes, the Minnesota Miracle was decades old, and it started out originally allocating really funds on a per capita basis. And over decades, that formula has been changed and corrupted. The very basis in which the program was sold and supported by constituencies all across the state, now a number of those same constituents do not benefit from local government aid. I would also point out that you mentioned Orono, which is one of the communities that I do represent. In West Hennepin County, in the legislative district, House District 33, Senate District 33, has, according to the Voss study, the most disproportionate amount of household income being expended towards property taxes, estimated to be at 5%, where the rest of the state is on average anywhere from 1.5% to 2%. So we have a situation out in our communities where they're being taxed to death already, and still we're talking about a low number of rooftops do not have the type of commercial tax base that you made reference to, and this is a problem that is quite a sore issue. And as I've talked with the League of Minnesota Cities, we continue to see more and more cities go off formula, and I don't think it's just simply because of tax capacity only. So I think the formula is antiquated, and I think it needs an overhaul. Thank you.
Thank you. It looks like everything is working for you now.
I think it is. Okay. Thank you. You know, in terms of what we do with the legislature, you know, we research issues, initiate legislation, gather support for that legislation, we lobby, we connect city officials with their legislators, we advocate through the media, and provide updates and action alerts to members. You know, in terms of intersection with the local government, and I'm sorry, this should have said local government committee, in terms of what we do, on many issues that this committee will face, honestly, we do leave it to the League of Minnesota Cities. That is, they're the experts on a lot of these, and there's a lot of issues that really sort of cross-cut cities, and, you know, Moorhead is going to feel the same way about Richfield, you know, about it that Richfield might. And so those kind of things we tend to leave to the League. Where we would interact with this committee most is on land use and annexation-related issues. And so I'll just talk a couple minutes on that. You know, I could give a primer here, but probably not the time or space for it. But, you know, in terms of how we view annexation, we view it as good land use policy. It is the process basically by which Minnesota's land use goals are achieved. The policy recognizes that sound urban development and preservation of agricultural land and open spaces is essential to economic growth. And if you look at the municipal boundary statute, which is, if I'm going to get this right, chapter 414, you'll see that there's legislatively stated goals for annexation policy. And those goals are basically city government is best for intensely developed land, townships are best for agriculture, open space, and rural. And I want to say right now, you know, townships and cities are both equally valid forms of government. However, they serve different purposes. Cities for urban development, townships for ag and open spaces. You know, why is annexation important? It promotes, you know, efficient government. It is good to try and make sure that, you know, decisions are being made in a way that makes sense. It promotes fair distribution of property tax burdens. It helps protect the environment. It preserves agricultural land and open spaces and helps the state meet its CO2 reduction goals. Because I'm already probably getting close to going over my time, I'm not going to go through all the examples. But, There are a lot of good examples of how annexation protects the environment and promotes economic growth. I'll just mention, two of them. One of them is Detroit Lakes. There was a situation where there had been a lot of housing developing around the actual Detroit Lake, which is a lake, you know, right in the middle of the city. And what was happening is, septic systems were starting to leak because the city, though, could see that was where the growth was going. So over the course of a number of years, they were able to annex that property and get them all on city sewer so that Detroit Lake is in much better shape than it used to be. So that was one use of it. Another use of it, just pointing to more recent Staples, for example, Sanford wanted to come in and put a new hospital in that area to sort of serve some of that population center around Highway 10, and they annexed land on the outside of town so that they could make that happen. They had nothing in there, so they did it immediately adjacent to the town so that we could have a hospital that was on the city water and sewer and whatnot. So I'm going to skip over the basic types. I guess the one thing I want to point out to the committee, you may know this already, but changing annexation laws tends to be contentious. Probably, because I think that folks want what they want. And I guess we have found that the best approach to legislation with annexation is achieving an agreement between the cities and townships. Because if we don't have an agreement between the two, it's winners and losers and what can feel like a zero-sum game. So I would say that the current system probably can use some tweaking, but generally it can be problematic if it's not acceptable to both parties. And that's why we're not planning to introduce any legislation on annexation this year, so you might not see me for a while. Jer?
Representative Freiberg, did you have a question?
Yeah, just a comment, I guess it's sort of a question. I know the policy of the committees with jurisdiction over local government and annexation issues in previous years, and this includes both parties, has been just not to hear a bill unless there is agreement between the relevant stakeholders on the annexation issue. I mean, in your mind, is that as an approach to legislation at our level, has that been an effective policy? Seems like it has been to me.
I think it is a very effective policy, and the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities strongly supports it.
Thank you.
All set?
I have nothing else. I want to thank you for your time, and for those of you, if you need Bradley Peterson's number to give more intelligent answers to questions about local government aid than I can, let me know.
Yeah, so. And the presentation was not in our package this morning, but we're told that we'll be emailing us the presentation so we have it for references. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Yeah, Representative McDonald.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
Yeah, I do. Thank you. Regarding our wastewater treatment plants for our rural cities, the cost, of course, is escalating through certain procedures and rules by the MNPCA. How is your organization able to help some of our smaller cities deal with those costs and mandates by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency?
This is a question I actually can answer. we are doing a number of things, and again, this is again an issue I will point out. We do work with League on some of this stuff. We work on it in a number of different ways. We have been trying to get more money put into the Public Facilities Authority because, quite frankly, some of the problems some of our cities are having is that their infrastructure is 50 years older or more, and replacing it is much more of a burden on, cities in rural Minnesota, and even some of the outlying ones that are in the metro area but haven't hooked into the MCES yet, because you just have a smaller base of people that you're spreading your costs around. And so we are pushing for that. We are looking at ways to try and we're still working on exactly what this is going to look at, but we are hoping to find some, tweak some of the programs so that cities are not paying, twice as much as it would cost to do that if, your sewer rates aren't twice as much or more as it would be in the metro area. We are looking at, and I'm not sure yet, on some of it we also work with the MPCA on regulatory stuff, so some of it's regulatory, some of it's legislation, so I don't know we haven't figured out what's going to be coming forward, but we are also trying to look at some concepts around, for example, integrative planning and looking at some changes that have just been recently made in federal law to try and make it so that cities are not getting hit overwhelmingly right away with, you know, you've got to change it to this. And then on a regulatory side, we have we do work to make sure that environmental standards and whatnot are grounded in good science. And so there's just a number of different things that we are doing there. But it is, that is an issue we do spend a lot of time on, because you're right, it really does, when you have a city of, you know, 1,200, 5,000 people paying for a, you know, or even less than that, some of cities are less than that, you know, paying for a multi-million dollar upgrade on your wastewater plant is a significant burden on a much smaller number of people. So we're kind of approaching it from a number of different angles.
Representative McDonald, is that satisfactory? Okay. Thank you. I think you're off the hook now.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next presenters are Metro Cities, and I see Ms. Nauman in the audience. Welcome.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for the opportunity to provide information to you this morning. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. Formally, we are known and have been known since our creation as the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. But about 10 years ago, we did a little bit of a rebranding just to help basically here at the Capitol to not become part of the sea of acronyms, which can lead to confusion. So we are informally known as Metro Cities. I'm not going to be using a PowerPoint today. There is a handout in your packet. But I'll just briefly share some information on the organization's purpose and then touch a little bit on our 29 legislative priorities. So Metro Cities was created in 1974 as the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. We are a nonpartisan organization representing the shared interests of cities across the metropolitan region, and that is the seven county region before the legislature, executive branch, and Metropolitan Council. The organization does serve as the primary representative to represent the collective interests of all metropolitan cities on both metro-wide issues as well as statewide issues that have some kind of metropolitan significance or component. And that can range the gamut from transportation funding to local government aid funding to a variety of other policies that may be before the legislature. Metro Cities does serve a unique role in the local government community in its representation of cities at the Metropolitan Council, and it was a primary reason for the organization's creation in the 1970s. And I'll just add that the organization did start out as a subsection of the League of Minnesota Cities when the Metropolitan Council was actually created, and then morphed into actually first a suburban league and then finally into the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. Metro Cities membership, currently we have 90 members. Membership in the organization is voluntary. The membership currently does comprise about 95% of the region's population. And cities that do belong to Metro Cities, Ms. Dyson had talked earlier about the city classes. We do have the first class cities in our organization. We have second class cities, third class, and fourth class cities. So we do have cities all across the metro and all shapes, sizes, and characteristics in the organization's membership. As I pointed out, Metro Cities does advocate for the shared interests of metropolitan cities, and that runs a range of issues, including transportation, local government aid, economic development, redevelopment, transportation, I'm sorry, I already said that, water and housing policy, to name a few. Policies are developed each year by the membership of the organization, and they are developed by consensus. They are vetted. Every policy in the organization is vetted each year by the organization's members. Policies are debated. Sometimes there can be contentious debate. Sometimes policies sort of run from year to year without being amended. But eventually they are adopted by the Metro Cities Board and membership each year. Metro Cities is governed by a 19-member board that is comprised of both elected and appointed officials, and the organization does have four permanent staff, including myself as executive director, two government relations specialists, and one office manager. And during the legislative sessions, we have also hired and have this year a temporary legislative intern to help us with the session work. Metro Cities does have also, I'll just point out, statutory appointing authority for the Metropolitan Council's Transportation Advisory Board and Technical Advisory Committee. Maybe just I'll add to our work on the Metropolitan Council that the organization does represent cities at the Metropolitan Council itself and does take policy positions there pretty much on issues that run the scope of Metropolitan Council policy and funding activity. And we also take positions on legislative issues that relate to the regional government. So that can also include a variety of things, including metropolitan governance that Ms. Dyson referenced earlier. For 2019, I'll just touch on legislative priorities for the association, and that they include, as always, transportation funding, funding for both roads and bridges as well as transit, and funding within any comprehensive transportation bill for city street funding. The association believes in local control and decision making where it is granted by state law in the preservation of that control. We do support increases in local government aid and also do support, and Representative Hurtas had asked about this earlier, our policies do stipulate that we support continued conversations, debate on continuing to reform the LGA formula. In 2013, the role that the association played was to try to improve the local government aid funding for the metropolitan area. We did make some strides there, but our policies continue to support those discussions. Resources for affordable housing and community preservation, and that runs the gamut from MHFA funding and other state resources to improving local tools. It also includes support for This Old House and This Old Shop, which will be introduced this session. Metro Cities does support funding for inflow and infiltration mitigation for metropolitan cities. This is to assist cities with repairs to both public local infrastructure and private properties that are contributing through a variety of deteriorating pipes or malfunctioning systems that ends up resulting in clean water entering the regional wastewater system. And we do appreciate the support we have received from the legislature in past sessions. The organization does support modifications to regional governance to add staggered terms and to increase both transparency and accountability in the selection process for Metropolitan Council members, including enhancing local official input into the selection process for members of the Metropolitan Council. And I think I will stop there, and I certainly can answer any questions, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. The Metro Cities has historically supported legislations for staggered terms of members and broader, as you just said, broader local government official participation in the selection of the members as well. And we'll see legislation like that before us soon. So,
You'll see me again, Mr. Chair.
Members have any questions right now? So everyone should have received the booklet with your policies that's been broadly distributed. Yes, so good. If there are no questions,
thank you very much, Mr. Chair members.
Next presenter is the League of Minnesota Cities. And I see Gary Carlson joining us here. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities Government Relations Team, and several of my other staff are here today as well. I'm not going to introduce them. They will be meeting with you individually in the coming weeks to discuss various legislative issues. Mr. Chair, I had a PowerPoint here, but you know what? I'm just going to wing it because it seems like the technology is not working that well. Six of you have served on city councils or been mayors, and you're probably familiar with the League of Cities. I should say in your packet we do have a couple of handouts as well that highlight some of the legislative issues we're working on.
The PowerPoint is in there as well.
So okay, the PowerPoint is in there, so I can actually just speak from that. But I want to talk a little bit about the other things that the League of Minnesota Cities does as well. So let me give you a little primer on our organization. The League of Cities was formed in 1913. We are one of 49 states in the United States that have state leagues of cities. We work closely with our sister organizations across the country on various legislative and other city governance matters. We also work with the National League of Cities at the federal level or at the congressional level on issues before Congress as well. So We were formed, as I said, in 1913. Until 1974, we were actually part of the University of Minnesota Extension Service. The League of Cities started as we were started as part of the University of Minnesota Extension Service, and the league formed as a way to try to actually bring professionalism to the governance of our cities across the state of Minnesota. We worked with the Extension Service until 1974. Because of our involvement with legislative affairs, a decision was made by our board of directors at that time to split off and become a separate organization, self-sustaining organization that does serve our member cities. As Ms. Dyson indicated, there are 853 cities in Minnesota. 833 of those cities are members of the league. The largest non-member city is a city in Representative Sandra Erickson's district. That's the city of Pease, and that is a population of 233. And of the 21 cities that are not members, I'll just let you know that when they call the League of Cities for any service, be it a legislative question, be it a governance question, we will answer those questions so that cities can have the appropriate legal advice to make sure they're functioning in concert with the state laws. We are governed by a board of, I'm sorry, was there a question?
Oh, yeah, Representative Costa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Individual cities pay like a membership due to belong to the cities, but is there state funding too?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kosnick, no, there's no direct state funding for the League of Cities. We basically operate off of member dues, and that's a choice that the cities make to become a member of the League. I'll talk more in a minute about other services that we provide, including insurance services. That does also generate some of our operation revenues. So I'll talk about that in just a minute here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I should just say we're governed by a board of directors that includes 18 members that are elected by our broad membership. Right now, our president is Heidi Omerza, the council member in the city of Ely, and our first vice president is Mike Mornson, the city manager in the city of Hopkins. So they do govern us. They meet once a month to discuss all sorts of legislative issues, but also just the general function of city government. Moving on. Ms. Dyson gave you a good background on the cities in Minnesota. I just want to show you this quick graphic. Most of our cities, more than 600 of the cities in the state, are under 2,500 population, so very small communities located throughout the state of Minnesota. We do have several cities that are larger, mostly in the metro area, but we do have some regional centers that Ms. Weifel represents as well in the cities of Rochester and Mankato and so forth. So this just shows you that a lot of our members are very small in terms of size. Ms. Dyson also already went over this slide, essentially. We have classifications of cities in Minnesota Statute 410. Just a note on the classification of cities. This was actually, and this predates me by many, many years, but at one time, the state law or state constitution prohibited the legislature from passing special legislation on behalf of cities. So the legislature came up with a classification scheme that's embodied in Minnesota Statute 410 that basically classifies cities in four classes, and Ms. Dyson adequately described that. I believe it was in the late 50s we amended the Constitution to basically allow special law, and you will, as Ms. Dyson indicated, there frequently are references to Minnesota Statute 645 that requires local approval of special laws that are enacted. So, for example, if a local sales tax bill comes before you or a local tax increment financing modification comes before you, generally those laws will include a reference to Minnesota Statute 645, I believe it is 021, where the city council is required to adopt or approve that law, file that with the Secretary of State to basically make that law a valid law. And so that is something that you'll see in many of the local government bills that come before you. Moving on, Ms. Dyson also mentioned statutory and home rule charter cities. This just basically gives you an idea that we have 107 home rule charter cities across Minnesota. It's not just large cities that are home rule charter. We do have some cities that are relatively small, that are under 10,000 population, that are also home rule charter. Most cities are statutory cities governed by Minnesota Statute 412, where we get most of our power and authorization. So you'll see that that we do have some laws that only apply to home rule charter cities and statutory cities, but that gives you a quick description of those. In terms of what the League does, and I want to focus on some of the things outside of the legislative arena, because you'll be hearing from us on a daily basis on issues before you. But we do, Representative Kosnick, as I indicated, we do provide insurance services for our cities. This grew out of a market failure back in the late 70s, where we as governmental entities, you as the state, we were getting sued quite regularly because the laws basically were not, they were kind of tipped against government entities and big businesses, because we were easy to sue. We had deep pockets. So we do provide insurance services, including property casualty and workers' comp insurance. We do research and inquiry. When cities call with a question on functioning of their government, we do provide a bevy of attorneys that give them advice. Conferences and training, we do also provide conference and training services for our cities. In fact, on Friday, I will be down in Mankato at a newly elected conference. Many of you, as when you became legislators, came to a newly elected orientation. We do that on behalf of cities as well, so that new council members and new mayors are well aware of the role and responsibility that they now have to fulfill. We do, as I said, or the intergovernmental relations is my department. We also provide human resource consulting for our cities. The human resource laws are complex, and we do give advice on behalf of the League to those cities that have questions. Two other things that we do quickly. We also help cities invest their property tax receipts so that they can secure the highest rate of return possible. So we have a program called the 4M Fund that basically allows cities to invest their assets while they're parked in a higher yielding return instrument that allows them to basically hopefully reduce their property taxes over time. And then finally, we do some policy analysis. We'll bring some of that to you and answer questions that come before the legislature as well. I'm not going to get into the various legislative issues that we cover. You've already heard about LGA and annexation and all sorts of issues. There are a lot of issues that that the League covers that other organizations don't delve into. If you have a question about any city issue or any issue affecting a city, please let me know, and I will point the appropriate staff to give you resources to help you understand the implications for cities. But I like to say we cover the issues annexation to zoning, the A to Z's, and everything in between, and we'd certainly like to work with you on any of those issues.
And I think we've all received the priorities and the booklet with the adopted policies for this year.
Right.
Representative Lean, I think you had a quick question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, just going back to that slide about workers' compensation coverage. So it sounds like the actual coverage comes from for-profit entities. Is it the state then that sets the rates and the coverage amounts, what is awarded for what sort of injury? Can you just talk about that a little more?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, the insurance that we provide, I guess the easiest way to think about it is we pool the risks of all of our cities, and we help to try to, well, we actually are an insurance business ourselves. So we are the ones that actually insure the cities that choose to be a participant in our workers' comp program. Many of our cities throughout the state choose to insure with us. They always have the option of insuring privately, but we do tailor our workers' comp insurance coverage to basically work well for a city government, so that it does acknowledge that we have, for example, individuals that have high-risk jobs. That we have firefighters, we have police officers that tend to be in higher risk jobs, so that we do provide and tailor the insurance for them. So it's basically, I guess the easiest way to think about it, it's a pooled insurance program that is run by the member cities. We have a governing board that runs that program, and it is we have loss control people that help cities avoid losses. We have claims adjusters. We run an insurance business. That is more than half of the staff at the League of Minnesota Cities. We also do property casualty coverage for our members as well. So it's quite a big program. It does, I mean, the workers' comp system is very complex. I was just in a meeting yesterday on a number of issues related to public safety insurance coverage issues. So it is an immense part of our job. I'll come and visit with you more specifically if you have other questions.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Well, you've got one last introduction here.
Oh, just these are some of the IGR staff that you'll see, or government relations staff that you'll see from the League of Minnesota Cities. Many of them are here today. Craig Johnson does all environmental and water issues. Ann Finn does transportation and public safety issues. Daniel Lightfoot just joined us. He'll be handling housing, economic development, and broadband issues. I tend to be in the tax committee and in the pension committee, so I do a lot of work on public pension issues as well. Ann Lindstrom does all of our vice issues and elections issues, so she'll be before the other subcommittee of the government operations committee working on elections issues as well. So with that, Mr. Chair, we'll be around the Capitol, happy to help you with any questions you have on city matters, and I appreciate the time.
Great, thank you. Any questions from members? No, we're good. Thank you. Thanks, Gary. Our last presentation is from the Municipal Legislative Commission. I see Tom coming to the table there.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for having me this morning. My name is Tom Pohl. I'm with Meserly and Kramer and represent the Municipal Legislative Commission. There should be a one-page handout that came around. But the Municipal Legislative Commission is a group of suburban cities, 16 of them. We were established in 1984, really as a voice of suburbs at the legislature. Our cities share common characteristics, really around demographics, economics, and tax base. However, our cities do differ, and some are rapidly growing, some are fully developed, and some are primarily residential cities, and some are significantly commercially developed. All of our cities share a number of challenges, particularly around development and redevelopment, around affordable housing, public infrastructure, and providing effective and efficient public services. Our association is primarily focused for advocacy at the Capitol. However, it is a forum for our mayors and city managers to provide best practices on a number of issues for our cities. Our group really promotes accountability and transparency in local government. And when working with the state, for us, stability and predictability, particularly around fiscal issues, are incredibly important. We do support a strong partnership with the state of Minnesota between the state and local units of government. However, we believe strongly in local control and believe that locally elected officials should be accountable for taxing and spending decisions. Our legislative agenda, the summary is on the backside of that page. I won't go through all of them. I'll just touch on a couple. In the property tax area, our group strongly supports individual property tax relief through the Circuit Breaker program. And that's property tax relief based on income and ability to pay. And it really is directed to those that need it most. Whether it's in Baudette or Burnsville, it applies the same. With respect to the other groups, transportation funding is an important issue for our group as well. We support a long-term comprehensive transportation funding package for both roads and transit, something that's regionally balanced, as well as something that includes congestion mitigation and local roads, and then funding that's tied to economic development, like the Transportation Economic Development Program or the TED program or Corridors of Commerce. Around local control, one of the areas that's been causing concern or I think eroding some local control is around the siting of wireless infrastructure and equipment. And that is becoming more and more difficult for our cities to manage the right-of-way particularly. And it is really becoming a greater concern, so something we'll probably be involved at. And it's not just from the state, it's both the state and federal government that are providing some challenges in this area. And then one area that's not on, on our agenda but that we're interested in is early voting. That's an area that we'd like to see some reform. I know the League has a package of items that I think they're going to move that will help in this area, and we strongly support those initiatives. More and more of our residents are voting early. You know, some at least 30% of our communities are voting early. But there is confusion and frustration, I think, around early voting. Many people come in and they think it's going to be just like Election Day where they get their ballot and fill it out and put it in the tabulator. But that doesn't happen. It's essentially absentee voting in person, really. They come in and get a ballot, an application that they fill out, put it in an envelope that gets put in later. And so we think there's some room for improvement there, and you know, and an opportunity to make it a more efficient and effective process. With the early voting, having cities have to staff that whole period of time, you know, not knowing when the volume is going to come in, has caused some challenges. So I think an area we can improve on as a state. And I think that is it.
Thanks, Tom. I think the Secretary of State's office already has a jacket circulating to address the envelope within envelope issue with local early voting. So we may see some relief on that one. Is it still the case that all of the member cities are net contributors into fiscal disparities?
Everybody contributes into the fiscal disparities pool. It's just some get more back than others. We have a mix. Most of our members are losers, so to speak, in that sense. But there are a few members that are gainers. But it is shifting.
Members, any questions for Mr. Pohl? If not, I think our business is concluded, and we can adjourn the meeting. Okay.